Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today I'm joined by Matt Martinez, pixel art artist and animator who has contributed to such projects as Vernal Edge and Pseudo Regalia. Hi, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm okay. I'm adequate. I'm average.
Well, I'm happy that you are adequate again. Hopefully your weekend has been, at the very least, average and adequate then.
Yeah, I think so.
So Matt, before we, get started, do you mind telling me and anyone who's listening a little bit about yourself, just so we have a baseline of, who you are or the important things that you feel everyone should know about you?
I'm an artist and a game design fanatic. Person very passionate about environments, exploring in video games, and sort of try to snag up any work I can that reflects those values. Big proponent of action titles, platformers, and stuff with mechanicality. Trying to think, because I've already done work, so that stuff kind of speaks for itself.
And that's fair enough. And thank you for sharing that. And Matt, I am curious. I haven't heard the term mechanical agency before. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe speak to what that is or what have you, just to better understand?
I was just thinking about it while I was saying it. I'm a big fan of games where you sort of have a palette of tools to use. And are given a lot of agency in how to decide to use them, as compared to games where you sort of have a tool and it is prescribed to a solution, kind of like a Zelda puzzle where the only way to really interact with this eyeball on the wall is to shoot it, or this switch on the floor is to weigh something on it.
Okay, so it sounds like mechanical agency is kind of like if you have multiple ways to solve the same puzzle, and whatever way you choose to do it, it's doable, solvable. I don't know the right term there, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I've never heard that term, but you explaining it makes perfect sense.
I made it up.
Oh, jeez. Well, there we go. I hope, maybe it'll be something coined, that you can take credit for in the future. And if you're lucky, it'll be one of those things that's like with speedrunners where where the person that does it, it gets to name it. And it's the Chucky Hopskitch step or something like that, and it's something mundane, just like a step that's lets you glitch through the floor, but it has a cool name.
I'm sure there's just a better term for it already.
I when you were describing it kind of sounded like the approach that an immersive sim would take, and I don't I know there's the weird thing or argument about whether immersive sims can be outside of first person. However, I like mechanical agency because it kind of, it takes away some of the stigma of what certain terms like immersive sim, what most people think of when you say that, it takes away the stigma or the pre idea generated as to what it has to go with. And it kind of removes it to be a function of itself. Right. So, for Baldur's Gate 3, where people have learned they can just stack a bunch of stuff and then dash over a gap, that gives them the agency in the system. But, you don't have to say it's an immersive sim because, the people that get upset when you say a third person or what have you is immersive sim is they get upset. Right.
Yeah. They need to play Metal Gear Solid 3.
I haven't played 3, but I do know that. Metal Gear in general has tried to give alternative ways to solve things outside of the passive and the non-passive routes. I think in 3 most famously is the one with the old sniper guy that you can just what is it, turn your machine off for a week, or fast track the system time for like a week, and then he just dies.
Yeah, I mean that, and blowing up enemy soldiers' food supplies so they are like hungry in future areas is the most immersive sim thing I can think of.
Oh wow, I did not know you could do that, and that's, you know, that's a very special kind of mental warfare implemented there. Like, you know, screw their food supply, and then later on in the game, you know, they're just, I don't know, tired enemies or whatever the byproduct is of them not eating.
I know that they're like more likely to eat rotten food when you throw it on the ground.
Hey, just a bunch of like hungry soldiers or whatever are chasing rotten food around as you're luring them away.
Yeah. It's a very interesting game, especially once you learn all those completely optional interactions.
Yeah, you know, like I'm, you know, like I said, I haven't had too much experience, but I do know that in some instances there is a lot of interesting interactions that work, like the older ones are 1 through 4, like, you know, throwing out the magazine or what have you, and things like that, right?
Oh, those are all really fun things to try out.
And like, you know, usually they pay off, right? I don't think there's really any gamer that they've set up where like a soldier is resistant to the magazine. I know they get resistant to the box or what have you, but like, you know, the magazine I think is consistently a trap for them, right?
Yeah. Oh.
So
gotta have Matt, some humor.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's have some humor that you can exploit well. You know, you can enjoy it while you're also exploiting them for, you know, the actual objective, right?
Yeah.
So Matt, I am curious, can you speak to maybe how you got into developing and making games?
I feel like I have the most common indie origin story, which is you play Cave Story and it's pretty cool, and then you find out that it was made by one person. Yeah, I can do that. Like, you know, I can learn how to draw stuff, and it's much harder than that, but that's sort of the big origin point. I started making Cave Story mods when I was in high school, and I liked making custom graphics, and I made a lot of very terrible maps. and coming around the end of that period when I was in college, I was like, I want to make some real video games now, and none of those took off for a very long time.
So and
that's sort of the origin. Sorry. No, that's sort of the origin of it all.
So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I didn't know that Cave Story had like a modding community. So like it sounds like there was like an ability to make levels and everything as well, or were you just like redesigning things and kind of injecting them?
Oh, there was level editors. You could make custom maps, scripts, replace art assets, and some people were doing hex editing and editing machine code and stuff to make custom features.
You know, that's pretty impressive, all things considered, because like Cave Story was like a pretty, I don't want to say straightforward, but Cave Story was like pretty kind of basic-ish game. So to hear like that people were remixing it, so to say, is pretty interesting to me.
It was a fun little scene.
So like, based on your experiences of getting started, you know, with making mods for Cave Story, and you know, some failed projects or what have you, is there like any words of wisdom that you could share with anyone that might be wanting to like jump into doing pixel art or you know, what have you?
Should probably take time to practice before you 100% commit yourself to working on dream video games. Just, you know, make some art pieces or prototype some little demos. It's pretty healthy to work in an environment where you don't feel like the thing you're making is supposed to work and last for years or support a whole big game. Before every project now, I try to do test pieces and practice pieces that I know are not going to be thrown in at all.
So can you speak to like why that's important?
Because usually when you work on stuff, you get better over time, just period. And it's very easy to fall into certain traps when you're a novice and you're starting to work like on remaking and redoing your levels and art and code 1,000 times over as you get better. It's nice to sort of begin a project knowing that you are at the baseline level skill you want to be to keep going forward with it.
Okay, so I think I understand now. So basically, what you're saying is like the first idea, like the first draft, like do a few drafts and then let yourself know that they're drafts effectively. So that way, after a few renditions or like when you walk away for a bit and you come back and look at it, now it's time to like see what you could have done better or like improve on them.
I would say write something completely different first so you know how to write.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Do some much lower spec, lower scope. Just practice stuff. Do a game jam. Write a short story. Don't 100% commit yourself to something, because I think it's impossible to tell people not to work on their dream projects right away. But it's easier to tell people do something non-committal and short first.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I understand. I completely misunderstood like the direction you were going. And yes, like I understand now, you know, like don't jump in there to your dream project. Like work on things that are more attainable, or attainable is probably the wrong word, but like something that you can maybe actually say you've finished or what have you, right?
Yeah, build yourself up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yes. So thank you for explaining that. I like I said, I missed where you were going. I thought you were meaning like when you start like a project, make a few like rough swings or bad swings at like that project, but you're meaning like before you start the big project, do other small projects and, you know, like have a foundation that you can base on. So that way, like, you're not sitting there going, I'm going to animate, you know, do some perfect pixel art and animate this character or whatever. And in the end, it's just like a stick figure with like 12 black pixel boxes or whatever, right?
Yeah, when it's work you've never even done before.
Which, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to, you know, kind of like what you said, you know, you like practicing and, you know, just with a cave story where you kind of got into it thinking, oh, this, I can do this or what have you. Like, I think a lot of people can relate to sitting down being like, you know, it's just putting pixels down on like a grid or something. How hard can it be? And then like they sit down and like, you know, you start putting them down. You're like, this looks like crap. And you can't figure out why. Right. Cause it's like, you know, you've seen pixel art everywhere. A lot of people have seen it, and you're in your mind, you're like, this can't be that difficult. And then reality slaps you across the face and you realize that these people have probably put like hundreds of hours into being able to just be like, yeah, I'm just going to make, I don't know, like make Mario in like 30 minutes. And they go and make like a Mario pixel set or sprite sheet or what have you really quick. And it's like, well, you know, this isn't their first rodeo. Whereas your first rodeo is making a bad Mario, which ends up turning into a like a stick figure with like 12 black pixels or red and blue pixels in this case or whatever, right?
Yeah, you definitely don't want your first rodeo to be something you commit a year of your life to.
Now is that from experience or is that
everyone's like, oh, I want to make a Metroid game. I just played Super Metroid for the first time. I learned how to make a couple art assets. I can do this, and it never takes off.
And you know, I think, like, at least they played Super Metroid, right? Like, you know, getting into Super Metroid is at least a step in understanding making a Metroid style game, right?
That's true. You have to have some taste for it, some liking for it.
So, you know, Matt, we talked about, you know, like where you got started or how you got started or what have you with, you know, Cave Story. So like, I don't know if it's safe to presume that Cave Story was the game that made you want to do this, or was there like a culmination of games and Cave Story was the one that made you go, now's the time, I'm going to try and do this?
I think so, because when I was a kid, I thought that making games would be cool, but that was like the first time when I felt like I had a jumping off point to try, or like it was a possibility other than getting a fancy degree and going to some studio.
So can you like speak to why Cave Story was that game that made you go, this is the jumping off point?
It was a lot of, well, one, there were the modding tools, so I had a chance to look at it and see how it's put together. And two, there's that story that, you know, someone made this game by themselves. They put all the tools together themselves. They weren't, there's a self-reliance pitch there that's very resonant when you're getting started, I think.
So, you know, and that makes perfect sense. You know, I think, because if I'm not mistaken, actually, I'm going to double check this real quick. But, like, I believe Cave Story was early 2000. Oh, 2004. Never mind. I was way off. But it very much came in the era of little indie games like this were... it wasn't unheard of to find out, like, only one person worked on it, right? Like, from this era that I can think of for like little games like this, you know, we had like what would eventually become the Xbox Arcade, or, you know, even before that, it was, oh man, I can't remember the name of this game. It's an old one. You played as like a woman, like a girl in like an underwater thing, Aquarius or something. That's definitely not the right name.
I don't remember the name either, but I know what you're talking about.
Exactly. And like Iggy, right? And if you don't know what Iggy is, that's perfectly fine.
I know what that game is.
Okay. a lot of people do not know what Iggy is, but like when I but like those games I do believe were like very low amount of people, if not just one person. So like, you know, it's really impressive for people of that era to have been like, well, here's a full game with tools and support tools and like everything surrounding it, right?
Yeah. Oh, what a time.
Like at least now it's gotten easier to maybe like bang some bite. I shouldn't say bang some out, because like, you know, obviously like these aren't just banged out, but like now it's much easier to actually create projects, because like now you have actual like game engines and other things that are supported, or like you have YouTube, you can look up a tutorial and not just have to like go to a forum and pray that you are asking the question in the right way, that someone goes, oh no, I know what you're trying to say, this is all you need to do, right? Like I don't know when you like the yearing kind of thing for when you would have been working on Cave Story, or truly working on the mods for Cave Story, sorry, or like what have you, but like a lot of people don't realize the only way you used to be able to get help was to like find a forum and pray that you asked the question in the right way and someone was generous enough to actually like tolerate the question itself, because sometimes people ask really bad, dumb questions, and like someone had to be a saint and roll in and be like, okay, look, turn this setting off. You just go in there and turn that off. I don't know why you didn't try it yet. You should have. Go do this and it will work, you know?
It was a time. And yeah, that was, I guess, one of the other appeals too about modding is there is a community and there's a forum and there's at least some people that are there to say how to do things or to say, no, you should just do something else entirely. That idea is not going to work.
Yeah, right? Like, you know, I know that there are some very smart people when it comes to like modding. And I'll like, for example, I'll use like the GZ Doom community, because like that was like a port or like a rewrite or what have you of like the Doom engine. And like now we've had like some really smart people doing really crazy stuff to make it do all sorts of wild things. But like someone had to be dedicated to make that work, right? And when you look at some modding tools, you know, it's not always, you're not always going to have someone being dedicated to do these big wild things. And that's not like a bad thing. It's just the reality of it. And having, you know, being able to have like some people go, no, this isn't going to work. It's going to be, you know, just move on and call it a day. Like that's a nice thing that someone is trying to save you the headache, right?
It's appreciated, especially and all, for all the times that they don't get listened to as well.
You know, like, yes, I am, you know, for every good piece of advice that someone listens to, there is definitely a good piece of advice that someone ignores completely because, you know, they really just want to make their dream project MMO with dragons or what have you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so with that in mind, you know, speaking to the game that made you want to do this, like, do you have, you know, maybe not the games that made you want to get into doing this, but like a favorite game or favorite games? Because, you know, Varnal Edge, you worked on that, and that one, I don't know, like, you were obviously the pixel artist and what have you. So, like, I don't know how much of this would translate to, but I would, in some cases or most cases, presume you would want to work on something that resonated with you, in this case being like the Metroidvania. So like I don't know if the appropriate question is to ask, like, are Metroidvanias like your favorite games, or do you like, what, or do you know, are they the entire separate like offshoot or what have you? Sorry, I'm bumbling up, basically asking a simple question of what is your favorite or favorite games.
Sorry. I mean, the top two going, the first one is Metroid Prime 2. So that's not a surprise. And the second one is Kingdom Hearts 2 Final Mix. And if you've seen Varnal Edge, I think that combination of answers makes a lot of sense.
So what is... Oh, okay, yes, I understand what you were saying. it does have a... is the character design is kind of I'm gonna say square softy, or am I off on the wrong mark there?
I mostly mean that Varnal Edge is a Metroidvania and a character action game.
Oh, okay, fair then. And I, by the way, I want to be clear. I don't mean that in a bad way. When I look at the character and go, "Oh, there's some Squaresoft inspiration in there," or to me at least. But then again, that could also just be the style itself and the very solid style that Square used during that era, right? So, you know, to speak more to that, maybe, you know, so what was it about those games? And like, you know, those are arguably very different games, one being a first person Metroidvania and the other being Kingdom Hearts 2, however you want to describe that. Action RPG or what have you. So like, what was it about those games that set them apart in your mind from, you know, from the other games that you would have enjoyed at the time or even now?
So there's a purity for me in Metroid Prime 2 specifically to exploring. It's sort of difficult to briefly say because it's so many different elements coming together. You have two different, I guess, minor Metroid Prime 2 spoilers for people, but you have two different worlds, so you have two different axes to consider for exploring, and they have some clever interactions branching from that. You're given tools to see across both of them when there's something important to see. And there's a lot of occasions where you're just sort of left to your own devices to figure out what to do and where to go. And that's sort of multiplies with the fact that the game has a very tense atmosphere. even in gameplay, you're sort of given a lot of responsibilities that I think some Metroidvanias wouldn't give you, like management of your ammo and resources, and kind of being on your own for deciding when it's time to go back off and save or go to a different area. And it comes together with a lot of good storytelling elements, stuff in the scan visor. And no, I'd say that without just gushing about the game, that's a really good descriptor of the sort of values I like about it a lot. It's cool, it's atmospheric. There's a lot of fun navigation challenges it asks. Kingdom Hearts 2 is a sort of different beast because it's a game with a lot of mechanical depth that is absolutely optional to engage with. I think there was a sort of movement a few years ago where people realized finally getting to play Final Mix, which had its hardest difficulty, that when that game's difficult, it's actually pretty fun to engage with. And that was a sort of discovery that took that to just to yeah. That was a discovery that people needed a harder difficulty to find out. And having played that, there's so much depth in just fighting, and on top of the normal action gameplay of like reacting to things, dodging, and planning out your animations, there's a level of resource management I really enjoy that bleeds into making decisions. Using your mana bar and your drives and limits, your spending resources on iframes or toughing out harder encounters with your, you know, reaction time gamer skills, it sort of comes together to a really nice complete package.
So, you know, thank you for elaborating, and that makes sense. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I'm always happy that Kingdom Hearts 2 was such a improvement, that it was such an improvement, like the combat system of everything that like 1 presented, just because like, you know, a few years back, I replayed 1 and then replayed 2 when the PS4 collections, I don't remember, came out. The last big remaster kind of thing or what have you. And trying to replay through 1, I realized that everything that I remembered as a Kingdom Hearts game was Kingdom Hearts 2, or like things that were based on the Kingdom Hearts 2 engine outside of that 1DS game for Kingdom Hearts, the one that you play as like the AI Sora or what have you, which felt like 1. But like I was playing through and I'm like, this isn't how I remember Kingdom Hearts at all. And then, you know, when I finally got to 2, I'm like, oh, this is why, because everything I associate with Kingdom Hearts, like fluid movement, you know, interesting, combos and, you know, like the overdrives or what have you, where you turn into, you transform, quote unquote, or what have you, like all of that, I'm like, oh, this is all 2. Yeah, no wonder I'm not enjoying myself, because Kingdom Hearts 2 was where it actually got fun, in my opinion, right? Like got into being the ability to do more than just like dodge roll and a few weak-ish kind of combos and then just dodge roll again. And then get stuck on the final boss because it like one hits you if you're not careful.
Yeah, there's definitely, obviously you don't have to play Kingdom Hearts 1 like that, but it's asking you to understand a lot to not play that way. Kingdom Hearts 2 has a sort of different problem where it's not asking you to understand enough, because they have a very generous auto combo system where your character performs attacks that have the right movement properties and homing and invincibility depending on the scenario that the game can read. So the game had a rep for a while, and still kind of does, on easy difficulties, of you just mash the attack button and Sora does a whole bunch of stuff and plays the game for you. Sort of why they needed the higher difficulty to come out before people realized how much there was to unpack.
So I'm curious, because like for Kingdom Hearts 1, I'm fairly certain This is how I played it the first time as well as the second time. Can you speak to what, in your opinion, is the right way to go about it? Because that is honestly how I approached it, and I didn't think there was any. Like, no. Obviously, I'm not a big follower of it. Let me rephrase that. I'm a big follower of the nonsensical story of it, but like the actual gameplay of one, I thought it was straightforward. And hearing that I was misinterpreting that, I'm curious to hear what, you know, like your approach was to maybe have a better respect or like understanding or what have you for it would be.
Landing on the ground cancels the end of your spell casting animations. You'll see a lot of people playing at a high level using spells by hopping and then casting and trying to land on the ground right after the spell cast finishes so they can do it again. I'm not going to say it's as good as Kingdom Hearts 2, but there's little bits of knowledge like that that make playing the game feel a bit different and a bit more action-y. It's sort of like trying to do double hits in Castlevania Symphony of the Night by attacking, landing immediately, and then attacking again.
So what I've just understood is that effectively Kingdom Hearts 1 had a version of wave dashing that you should be exploiting every chance you get with magic.
Yeah, sometimes tech is like that.
Which I'm not gonna lie, the amount of like, I don't think wave dashing is probably not the right term. However, it's the most applicable term that I think everyone kind of has an understanding of. But like, hearing that, you know, the more you find in games where something akin to like wave dashing, is like the min max optimal way to like exploit the system is always amusing to me, just because like it's something that, you know, you don't there isn't really a word to it until like Smash Bros is like, well, here's wave dashing, right? And then like everything else you see it and you're like, oh, well, that's the easiest way to refer to, you know, all these little texts that before like had weird ununified names that in my opinion didn't always explain or what happened. Like, it goes back to the speed running thing where it would get like Scritch's hopscotch and be like, well, that's just like hitting the ground while using magic and doing it again and again and again, right? Like, it's just the in community name that outside the community you just go, and that means what, thank you.
This is also a problem we had to deal with when we were making Vernal Edge. Because when people are playing an action game especially, it can be really difficult to get people experimenting with the tools available to them or alternative ways to use them. Because most people's goal is destroy health bar. When we were talking a little bit ago about Kingdom Hearts 2, and I think one of the ways that game avoids that problem for normal playthroughs is that there is many options of it. Well, let's see. When you mash attack, obviously Sora does a lot of distinct actions already because Sora's AI is adapting to the enemies getting knocked away from you or switching targets, or he does a spin attack mid-combo if you're surrounded. There's a lot of flashy adaptation going on, but also the triangle button prompts pop up all the time where the game starts saying like, hey, do something different real quick. And then you get a cool result. And it's like, okay, now you can go back to doing whatever you want. And of all the spells, I think most people figure out cure. So there's that other little layer of like, oh, well, when I'm low health, I have a heal button, but I can't use it all the time because my mana will come back very slowly. So there's a lot of very easy decisions to figure out in that game that I think works for it. Because it's pulling teeth a little bit to try and get people to use their options in the game.
Yeah, you know, I understand, like, it's kind of this, I think, like, the best analogy to say that I understand or parallel is, like, when you're playing a game and it's like, here's this big health potion that heals your mana, your health point and your skill points. Here's a big scroll that does like a firestorm and it'll do like 900 damage a hit 20 times or whatever, right? and you're like, oh, okay, I'm just going to store this away. I'll need this. And then like, it's kind of treated like that thing that you're like, I'll pull this out one day when I really need it. But then you find that like the time to have used it was just whenever. And like everything else was you like just doing the normal stuff because you want to save this whatever trick or what have you, or like when you're when it's like a last resort kind of thing. Like and then like an action game to be more like closer to something like Kingdom Hearts 2 or whatever, like changing up the pace in my mind, or like being a little more aggressive or what have you, in my mind is like getting greedy. And like, so I understand what you're saying, because like I'm one of those people where I'm like, I don't need to do this. That's I can't be greedy and then like, you know, whittle the boss away instead of taking big chances to do things that are outside of my normal realm. Does that make sense? Like, does that match as a parallel to what you're trying to say? I don't know.
I think that's a good fit or description for it. Yeah. There's a sort of solution to that problem I've thought of before, which partially comes down to make different video games, but I presume this is an indie game podcast. You're familiar with Hollow Knight?
Yes, I am. I'm familiar with Hollow Knight, and like the I don't know if Hollow Knight's like the first. Sorry, I don't know if this is the direction you're going. So forgive me if I'm misinterpreting, but like, yes, I'm familiar with Hollow Knight and like the kind of games that came about around the same time or what have you, where it was like a much more difficult and technical Metroidvania-ish game. I don't know if that's the way you're going, so I apologize if I'm like injecting things I shouldn't be.
I'll help steer a little bit. Familiarity with Hollow Knight and From Software games is a pretty good example for this design issue. And the issue is mostly that if you give people a lot of fancy tools to use, it's pretty hard to convince them to stop doing what works, to stop attacking, using invincibility frames, or moving out of the way of things. You'll notice that in Hollow Knight and a lot of From Software games like Dark Souls, that's pretty much all there is to do most of the time anyways. So there's a sort of distribution of complexity that goes on where if you're like me and you like a game like Kingdom Hearts 2, well, not always necessary. There is a lot of distribution of complexity weighted towards what you can do. You have different options for your mana bar and how to utilize it. You have summons, limits, drive forms. There's a lot of viable options at any given point in time, and that's not even getting into the intricacies of individual attacks or what the knockback properties are on a spell. And most people just mash X the entire game. But you go into a game like Hollow Knight or Dark Souls, and that complexity is shifted away from the player, where most of your options are very, very intuitive and easy to understand. And it shifted closer towards the content of the game you're playing itself. So players get to use a simple kit that's easy to understand, but they go against bosses that require more and more effort to utilize it properly. As they've developed, I know FromSoft has been making bosses do weirder and weirder attacks with harder to anticipate timings. And Hollow Knight starts stepping up complexity with weirder attacks and enemies appearing mid-encounter, sort of requiring you to utilize your platforming tools more. So we get that sort of dichotomy where those games where complexity is weighed towards the encounter tend to be more popular, I find, because most people are more interested in the content of the game they're playing than like picking up a new skill as they're playing a game. Whereas I personally enjoy that a lot, but no, it's not quite as financially lucrative from the perspective of making a game for money.
So I understand what you're saying, and like thinking about it, yeah, you know, like having a more straightforward kind of mechanic or what have you that requires you to master that or get better at it. You know, like, I understand that you're right, that that's not always going to be the most lucrative or what have you, because, you know, and like, I think I can speak to this because I'm one of those people where, like, I like the big flashy things. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoy games that have like a higher level of technicality to them. I might not be good at them, but like, I enjoy the idea of them. Like, I have to try and get back into Hollow Knight, but I played Haiku, the, you know, the robot, and it was a similar kind of approach, in my opinion. And like, I like the idea of that, but I'm a simple brained man, and I like the idea of big flashy things sometimes when all I have to do is press X 20 times and, you know, watch my character dance around the screen and, you know, send the enemies flying.
Yeah, and then the boss does a big epic attack and you're like, I already know how to deal with this. I just have to be really good.
But yes, you know, as someone that has played and enjoyed, you know, some of the Souls-like games and, you know, games similar to Hollow Knight, I also understand exactly that. And I also, it's a shame that the market for that is smaller, but it's also, you know, nice to see that that market, while smaller, is getting bigger, right? Like, which is like good for people that want to make those kind of games. Cause, you know, before, you kind of just, the only games options you had were whatever was going to make it to, like the Xbox or, then it, like, you know, whatever was going to make it to the console, you know, like 20 years ago was very minimal. You know, the Xbox Arcade was, I don't even think it started in like, you know, 2003 definitely didn't, but like, you know, it was still years off. The Steam approach was still years off. You know, 20 years ago, it didn't exist. So, like, knowing now that it's easier for all things to just make and publish those games is great, because, like, you know, the financial viability of it, you know, instead of before where, like, the person had, you know, if you like the game, you had to, like, pray PC Gamer did a little piece on it, and then someone went to your website and paid with, like, Secure Access Pay or through PayPal, and prayed that little, like, thing on the bottom of the site that said secure from hackers or whatever was actually valid. And, you know, now it's like, if you find a game that you like, because your favorite YouTuber was like, look at this, you know, technical game or what have you, like, you can, more people can jump into it and, like, encourage that, that market, that, you know, smaller whatever, to, like, actually expand. I know I said a lot of things. I apologize for some of that being rambly, but, like, I think you understand, or I hope you understand what I was trying to say there.
No, I absolutely understand what you're trying to say there. Scenes changed a lot. It's kind of weird sometimes to remember that this indie game, like, grocery store that we get to enjoy essentially on the internet is a relatively new thing.
Yes, exactly, right? Like, you know, I'm like 35. I shouldn't say like 35. I am 35. and speaking of just like before that grocery store and after, like, I stumbled across Iggy. I don't even remember where I downloaded it from. It probably wasn't like in the era of that internet at that time. I probably just stupidly downloaded a link that someone posted and went, whatever, let's see what happens. You know, like the whole Kazza approach with, you know, this song could be what it says, or it could just be, you know, Mario saying woohoo for 20 minutes straight. Who knows? We'll find out, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was in that era of, like, I don't even know. It was dangerous. And, like, now if you're like, you know, I'd really like to play a game like Cave Story or like Hollow Knight or what have you, like, it's, there's a section on, like, you know, Steam or on, like, the Xbox market. I don't own an Xbox. Well, I do. I don't use an Xbox, really, so I don't know what their what have you is. But, like, the Xbox store, like, the PlayStation store, like, the eShop on Nintendo, like, they're categorized. You can just go explore, like, the challenging challenging platformer Metroidvania section to see what's there. and like give them your money because it's something you know you're gonna hopefully enjoy because you've enjoyed other games like it, right? Like it's wild just how nice that is now to be like, I don't have to struggle to find games that I'll probably like. Whereas before you were like, well, whatever Ubisoft's putting out this year, that's the game I'm picking up for Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
Which, to be clear, not to speak ill to people that are like that. I'm just saying, you know, the people that are not fans of that model of those games, you know, they get to eat as well, right? Like everyone gets to eat, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, more options is always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That being said, please choose me.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, in this case, please pick up Vernal Edge. I keep wanting to call it swap the A and the E in my brain. I'm sorry. Please pick up Vernal Edge or Pseudo Regalia that you worked on, right? Like, help you eat.
Absolutely. Please.
So, Matt, I am curious, and I don't know how this is going to go, so I'm just going to throw it out there and, you know, pray, I guess. But, like, from the sounds of it, you're someone that has looked at games like, you know, Kingdom Hearts and tried to, like, figure out the mechanics and, like, enjoys, you know, like, Metroidvanias or, like, the action platformers or, like, however you want to categorize these games. Like, Cave Story, whatever it falls under, you know, the larger umbrella. I'm curious, is there a game from that genre that you maybe don't feel like enough people know about or get enough credit that like you've enjoyed that you like think more people should just know of existing?
Let me think. I know there's some left field games that are completely not in the genres I've mentioned. I think more people should play GTFO. Cause I'm also like most Americans, a shooter fan. and that's a game that's sort of in a early access but pretty nice right now, where you play through very long structured missions and have very high stakes, which is a turnoff for some people, but that's an indie game right now that I think more people should try, and I absolutely want more people to play it with, please.
So if I'm not mistaken, GTFO is like the, like if Left 4 Dead games, so, you know, Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood, World War Z or what have you, if they were like arcadey zombie rushes, I guess, GTFO, if I'm not mistaken, is more like a tactical, serious, not arcadey version of that, right?
Yes. Even though it actually has some more arcadey properties, but that's stuff like, your gun is more accurate when not aiming down sights, and like some of those simulation-y elements aren't as emphasized. It's very, the tactical element doesn't require that to work.
So can you speak a little more? Because I'm not going to lie. I remember when GTFO was like first announced and it was like, oh, this looks interesting. But I never played it. I just never, like none of my friends ever played it. So like it kind of came on and then off my radar real quick. Can you like speak to a little more about why you don't feel it gets enough credit? Just because like I'm pretty much in the dark about it, and I'd like to hear your take on it more.
Well, first of all, it's a little expensive, so that's a component of it. unfortunately, you can kind of tell from Pseudo Regalia's release price, but getting people to swallow a price tag is less about the merits of your game than it is about whether they already expect they're going to like it and know who you are. So that's an unfortunate reality we live in. For this game in particular, I think that it's a little hard to swallow because this is a game that gets much easier the more you know about it and the more you're willing to learn external things about it, which is not inherently appealing for a lot of people. I'm not saying that this is a game you need to like study up on, more so that there's a lot to unpack and a lot to get better at and improve upon and think your way through, which were some of the merits I described when I was talking about why I liked Metroid Prime 2 so much.
So thank you for that. I understand what you are saying, and that makes sense. It's kind of like, I'll use a game that I can actually kind of speak to. Maybe not anymore because it's been several years, but like Payday 2, for example, like the way the way certain things interacted together, in Payday 2 was like, you had to understand, like, you know, what all the different players, what their skills were, and like, you know, being able to understand how to utilize your own skills and everything like that. And it, so it sounds like that's probably a barrier to entry with GTFO, in that, you know, to really start to enjoy it, you need to like understand that, like, you have, you know, like 5 zip ties that you can use on someone, and like at least a minimum of 4, you know, shut up and sit downs to use before like it doesn't always work, right? Like, and knowing what you have available to you and what your partners have available to them, you know, just makes it so when you are trying to tactics your way through, or what have you, I don't know if tacticking your way, like tacticking is the right word, but like, you know, setting up the moment to moments that are manageable, like, it sounds like that's the real key to me, is that like, you just, you know, unfortunately need to find people that are willing to struggle through that beginning era of, what am I doing and what am I doing wrong, before everyone goes, oh, this is what we're doing right, right?
Yeah, very similar to like a major learning element of that game is learning how enemy waves work and how they spawn in, which is, it's kind of horse to expect people to know that. just to be like, oh, well, I'm sure you'll figure out what enemies are doing when they spawn 2 rooms away eventually, and what they're like doing. So that's a case where community documentation is very nice.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. And like, that makes perfect sense, because like, you know, with the more arcadey ones like Left 4 Dead, and I kind of assume Back 4 Blood, and I don't know about World War Z, but like, you know, it sounds like the GTFO doesn't have kind of like the dynamic like narrator, game master person sitting, like the system that's gonna like you know go do this, go do that. That it's kind of
the
more
director, they call it.
Yes, thank you. The director. It sounds like GTFO is a little more consistent in knowing that certain tells are going to lead to certain things, and not just like getting blindsided by something because the AI director went, you know what, it's time for this. Buckle up, have fun.
You've had it too good for too long.
Yes, we haven't thrown a tank at you. Now, good luck, because we're throwing 2 tanks at you, right?
That game's very consistent and learnable, luckily.
Which, you know, I think is, which is nice for a game like that, like, you know, being able to have a game plan that you can actually plan around, instead of just being like, you know, if we're lucky, this is how it'll work out, right? Like having optimal runs that are completely out of your control due to RNG, right?
Yeah, that's a bit of that agency thing too. Once you know the game well enough, you get to say, like, it is not up to the game whether or not I win at this point. It's up to me.
You know, yes, that's a good way to also put it, right? Like, being able to win having the everything based more on your skills, as opposed to the, like, some director, just the AI deciding to throw a wrench at you just because in that moment it determined that would be funny, right?
Yeah, funny is definitely the word I'd use for it.
quote unquote funny. But like, I don't know if you've played some of the mods for Left 4 Dead. Funny is the right word for it, because, you know, like the AI director goes, "Here's 2 tanks, but have you thought of 4 tanks?" Right? Like, you know, and suddenly the entire enemy team is tanks, and you're like, "Oh, okay, well, that was a fun time. The director said yes to this."
Yeah. Oh, it can get untenable at times.
Thank you. That is a good word, untenable.
So, I've definitely seen some people trying the solo stuff in that game and saying, like, man, I hope the game doesn't do this to me right now.
And, you know, it does, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Matt, one more for you, because I, you know, I'm kind of on the same topic. Is there a game that you enjoyed as, like, a kid, or, you know, when you were younger, or what have you, that, or an older game even, maybe, that you've played, that you feel just doesn't hold up today? Like, you know, what game that you really enjoyed and, like, you've tried to go back to play it, you're like, oh, what was wrong with me? In my case, that was Kingdom Hearts. But we've already discussed that. But, like, true. You have a game like that.
The original Rayman. Oh, that game is so not fun. Just walking around listening for the annoying trigger sound effect that shows that, like, you stepping on an invisible thing caused a thing to spawn behind you, and it was, like, necessary to get to the final level of the game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't actually played the original Rayman, and, you know, that doesn't sound fun, right?
No, that's a game where you need to 100% the game in order to reach the last level.
Yeah, those are never fun. Like, I've played a few of them where, like, you have to do it, like, perfectly on, like, the hardest difficulty, and then you get, like, a whole other level, and you're like, well, why? Like, why are you doing this to me? Like, what's wrong with you?
And the last level is, like, filled with very hard gimmicks.
It's similar to, like, the Mario Superstar levels, except those ones are more of a reward and not a punishment.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, that game definitely did not hold up that well.
So I'm curious, do you feel the same way about its sequels, or do you think the sequels are where it figured it out and got it better?
I think the sequels are rad. I don't think Rayman 2 is that fun to play, but I think it's one of the most interesting game atmospheres I've ever played. Very ambitious for a 3D platformer to be to open coldly on such a stark situation, I guess, where everyone in the world is being enslaved by robot pirates.
Well, yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying there. Yeah, that's a pretty wild cold open. And also that was relatively 1999, so that was relatively early in the era of, like, third person platforming. So, like, you know, at least it survived that, like, you know, right?
Yeah. It's a cool game though.
You know,
And Rayman 3 is annoying but fun. And I mean annoying in that they're, like, referencing the movie Spider-Man 2 in the script and stuff. Like, trying to be a jokey game.
Oh, I understand. So it's one of those games where, like, you play it and it's dated. It's not, like, timeless references. It's, like, a very specific screenshot or thumbnail of, like, the world in that moment and nothing else.
This is worse than Gex.
You know, I don't know about Rayman 2, but, like, Gex is getting a remake. Rayman 3, it might not be.
Oh, that's... You didn't have to tell me that. You didn't have to tell me that.
I'm sorry if you were unaware of that.
I did not know Gex was getting a remake.
It's getting a remaster by Limited Run.
You know, they would be the ones to do it. Anyways, go check out Double Shake when that comes out, since my friends are making that game with Limited Run.
You know, yes, I will agree. Check out Double Shake. Double Shake is, I played it, and, like, I went in, when I tried it, I started up, I'm like, oh, this feels like it's a reference. I'm like, we'll see. And, like, immediately I'm like, oh, no, this is definitely a reference. Like, the, you know, it's 100%. And I was like, I'm shocked that it took this long for someone to be like, Mischief Makers needs a spiritual, or, like, a game inspired by it, right?
Yes. Like,
I'm shocked it took this long, given the climate of of the indie scene, right? Like, it's, I'm very shocked that it was this long until someone was like, time for Mischief Maker's inspiration.
You know, one more game that people should have given a shake, Tomba. Because that's one of the other games that Double Shake is inspired by that I grew up with. Tomba is awesome.
So I'll say this as well, because if you didn't know, Tomba is also getting a remaster by Limited Run Games.
God damn it.
So, like, in this case, at least more people will get to see and check out Tomba.
May God have mercy on their souls. That's a good experience.
I personally can't speak to, I didn't have a PlayStation until like it was the end of its life cycle. So I missed pretty much the entirety of the PlayStation 1 line. Like anything that was made effectively without the DualShock, the dual analog, like in consideration, I missed out on that entire generation set. So like, I'm excited to have a reason, or an excuse to look at Tomba, right? Some people might not be if they were around for when it first came out and like, or just already went and looked into it on their own.
That's a very fun game series, especially once again, if you like exploring and following clues and junk.
Which, you know, I imagine, you know, it might in this era might, with someone like the indie game scene, it might resonate even more with people now, right? Because, you know, it's an easier market, or sorry, not market. The grocery store is larger and easier to go to now, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the best and safest way to refer to like all of the game platforms that you can get stuff on. And I've spoken with people in real life that hate that analogy, because they seem to think like something like the eShop or like Steam or what have you should be treated more like a storefront. And I say storefront, like, you know, you go to like the board game store for board games, and then you go to the grocery store to get milk. Whereas, you know, these are more like, no, you just wander into like the dairy section to see what's new in dairy. But if you don't want anything from dairy, just go to the bakery and get your bread and leave. Right. Like,
yeah.
I'm happy that, you know, the grocery store is getting bigger and like people can just aimlessly wander, even if it disappoints some people that some of the stuff that's going to be put on that shelf is just gags.
Oh, gag games.
So, it's
a whole different topic.
So Matt, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Like, I want to let you get on if you're Sunday evening. I want to let you relax before like the week restarts. So like, if there was anything else you did want to discuss, a cool game, you know, what else, you know, talk about maybe what you're doing or something you just feel more people should be aware of, by all means, I want to give you the floor for that, as well as I want to let everyone know where they can find more information about you, which I'll also include in the episode description.
Yeah. I don't know. We have a personal Discord for Vernal Edge that we use, which honestly you can find by Googling. That's the nice thing about having verified servers. I have a Twitter account, where I'll post new projects. Cause usually, I have a idle hands problem. There's usually a new project in the works all the time. No, I don't think there's much. I'm just going to make more video games and then people are going to buy them, hopefully.
You know, fingers crossed for you, right? Like, I'm always happy to hear when people can stay fed while doing the things that they enjoy. And, you know, I think that's important, right? Like, why should we be trapped like a hellscape of doing things we don't enjoy when we can do the things we do enjoy and also eat at the same time, right?
Yeah, thank God. There's some circles of the internet where they find that a contentious idea.
I don't understand why that's a bad thing. And like, I'm definitely not the person to discuss that, because I am very much in like your camp on that, where it's like, would you not prefer to like do what you like doing and still eat? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, I just cannot fathom it. And I'm sure a lot of other people are in the same boat as me, where there's what's wrong?
There's a lot of narcissists out there.
You know, if therapy wasn't expensive, I'd say they all need therapy.
Yeah.
But Matt, as I said, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So if there wasn't anything else, I will definitely let you get back to enjoying the rest of your weekend.
Yes, thank you. It's been a lovely time.
Yes, I very much, as I said, I screwed that up. I wanted to say I very much do appreciate you making the time for me. I did, it was fun getting to hear your take on things, and the Kingdom Hearts for me was interesting to know that there were other ways to make that kind of more exciting, quote unquote. I don't know the right way to put that, but I just appreciated hearing some of your takes on things, because I never took into consideration the term mechanical agency or Kingdom Hearts having the ability to wave dash your way through your magic usage. But Matt, as I said, if there wasn't anything else, I definitely will let you get on of your evening.
All right, then thank you for having me, and have a good night.
So thanks again to Matt for making time to have this conversation with me, and thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast, as well as a special thanks to Roland Jenkins for the use of music from the title track from Roads Deep. And be sure to check out the episode description for links to socials, websites, and other means that will allow you to learn more about or support Matt and the podcast. While you're doing that, also be sure to follow, and be sure to share with those you think might also enjoy it. Thanks, till next time.